Welcome, gentle listeners, to the Daily Nightly, a Jane Austen journey, where we'll be reading the collective works of Jane Austen and exploring her influence in pop culture. We are your humble servants. I'm Annie.
And I'm Jessie.
And today we are talking about chapters 51 through 55 of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice.
Almost done.
Things were a cooking this week.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I highlighted almost like every line in my book.
At some point in the notes, I'm like, I'm just rewriting the entire book verbatim.
Yeah, exactly.
Before we get into it, though, Jessie, tell me what you've been reading.
Okay, I have to be careful not to gush here because I was just really lucky since we last recorded that I read two fantastic books that might be in my top 10, if not my top books of the year,
wow.
Like in my life, basically. The first is a recommendation from you, Interior Chinatown by Charles Yu. I know you already talked about it on the pod, so I don't need to really go into it or try to convince people more to read about it, but I want to second your recommendation because I loved it. I'm telling you nothing you haven't heard before because I immediately messaged Annie. I was like, this book is so good. You're so right. It was funny and touching, and it's written like a script, but it's still just the prose is beautiful, and it really made me think and reflect. I found a lot of it relatable. You know, I'm not an Asian American, but I do have immigrant experience, and there's a lot that I relate to, but I also learned a lot, and I just really enjoyed the experience of reading it, and I'm just really sad that I don't know if I would have discovered it if it wasn't for Andy's recommendation, and so I'm very grateful, and I want to thank you again for recommending it to me because it was fantastic.
Oh, good. Yeah, it was one of those things where I'm like, I don't know. I feel like it has like fairly broad appeal, but the format plus the subject matter, I don't know if some people would find it too intimidating or maybe not something they would relate to. So I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, no, I think everyone should read it for just many, many reasons. And then I also just recently finished The House in the Cerulean Sea by T.J. Klune. And just like, wow, like this is a really special book. It really blew me away. It's about, I can't even really tell you what it's about. It's one of those sort of ephemeral books. But basically, it's about a lonely caseworker named Linus. And he's sent to investigate an orphanage full of magical children, including the Antichrist. It was charming and it was funny and it was lovely, and it's about finding your found family and discovering your inner strength. And I really can't recommend this book enough. You just have to sort of take my word for it and read it without even reading more of the description. I cried when I read it. I've been reading a lot of books to my newborn baby just like aloud because, you know, like whatever, you know, I don't need to read her The Hungry Caterpillar 1,000 times. I can just read her whatever I'm reading, and I was like choking up while I was reading it to her. And it's just completely lovely, and I just want everybody to read about it and then cry about it with me.
All right, Googling it right now.
I kept it together.
Oh, that sounds lovely. I don't know if I'm ready for feelings right now.
Yeah, it's going to make you feel stuff. I mean, it's not a sad book. It has, I don't know, like a happy ending or whatever, but it'll make you feel stuff. So be prepared.
Feelings. All right. Well, I can't say I've been in the mood for feeling stuff.
Yeah, that's a lot true. I
finished Lovecraft County, which I, why do I keep calling it County?
No, I call it County too. Yeah, it's Country.
Yeah, it was like, I think a week before the show came out, I'm like, oh, it's Country. That's new. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. I did finish it like immediately after we talked about our last time, and I enjoyed it. I don't know what I was expecting from the ending, but it was good. Mm-hmm. And the show itself has given me a lot to think about as a non-Black woman of color in this country. Still would recommend. Matt Ruff, the author, had a really great interview on the For All Nerds podcast talking about the adaptation, talking to two Black hosts who loved the book and loved the show. So I would recommend that. Still reading Never Let Me Go, and You Had Me at Ola. It's just been a crazy week at work, so I sadly haven't had enough time. Mostly I've been dipping into books that don't require too much involvement and paying attention to the narrative otherwise. So after like 9 months, I finished Gabby Dunn's Bad with Money, which does talk about like important adult money stuff. Mostly though, it's just been me learning about her personal history. It's a fun book. If you listen to her podcast, you'll probably enjoy it. And I picked up Kitchen Table Tarot for no reason other than the fact I got a very pretty set of tarot cards that I have no idea what to do with.
That's a good enough reason to me.
It is a good enough reason. It's actually a really like fun, irreverent way of like talking about it. And tarot's not really a thing I've had much interest in the past, let alone like strong beliefs, but it's pretty cool to dive into someone's perspective from like the spiritual aspect. And yeah, so I guess I didn't read nothing.
Yeah, that's like a very varied palette that you have.
That's me. Very. But I think we can all agree the most important thing that we read since we last recorded has been these fine chapters of Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah, it's been nice to see sort of what we've been building towards come to fruition.
We are, what, 10 chapters away from the very end?
It's like 6 more chapters after these.
Yeah, so we're over the hill in the roller coaster, and I feel like we're screaming to the bottom.
That's true. I know. I was like, how is there such a little left? I feel like there's so much more to resolve, but I guess we'll see.
We'll see how neatly it'll wrap up. Previously on Pride and Prejudice, Elizabeth, while on her little holiday, finds out from Jane that their little sister Lydia has intelligently run off with Wickham while she's in Brighton. She and her aunt and uncle, the Gardners, run off, leaving Darcy in their dust to help with the family deal with this. Back at Longbourn, the Bennets are all in a flutter. Mrs. Bennet's pretty sure that Mr. Bennet's going to have to fight a duel. Mr. Bennet goes off with Mr. Gardner to try to fix the whole thing, even though he seems like he's going to be pretty useless. Finally, though, after much hubbub and Mr. Bennet returning, having accomplished absolutely nothing and not at all finding Lydia and Wickham in Scotland married and this whole problem solved, the Gardners announce that indeed these two rapscallions will be married, much to everyone's relief and with a lot of scandal and whispering on the side from the neighbors. Everyone's pretty sure that Mr. Gardner had to pay a lot of money to make it happen, because who in the world is going to marry Lydia for so little? Now that everything's solved, the Wickhams are due to come visit the Longbourns. Lizzie is now left to lament the fact that she will definitely have Darcy in her life, even though she really, really wants him now, because they'd be perfect together. Anyways, a lot happened, but also not that much.
That's true. That's true. I know. I feel the way about what we just read, too. Like, a lot happened, and I have, like, so many iconic quotes that I highlighted, but then I looked at the actual summary. It was like, oh, there's just, like, 5 points.
Yeah, it's just, like, a lot happened inside my soul.
Yeah, I was so excited, but I don't know. So the new Mrs. Wickham arrives at Longbourn, and the 10-day visit is very difficult. Lydia is oblivious to all the trouble she caused, and Wickham behaves as if he's done nothing wrong. One morning, while sitting with Jane and Elizabeth, Lydia describes her wedding and mentions that Darcy Gasp was in the church. Elizabeth is amazed and sends a letter to Mrs. Gardner asking for details. Mrs. Gardner replies to Elizabeth that it was Darcy who found Lydia and Wickham, and Darcy who paid Wickham the money that facilitated the marriage. She drops hints that Darcy did so because of his love for Elizabeth. Elizabeth's surprise is immense, and she's unsure whether to be upset or pleased. After Wickham and Lydia depart for their new home in the north, news arrives that Mr. Bingley is returning to Netherfield Park. Mr. Bennet refuses to visit him, and 3 days after his arrival, though, Bingley comes to the Bennet's home accompanied by Darcy. Mrs. Bennet is overly attentive to Bingley and quite rude to Darcy, completely unaware that he was the one who saved Lydia. Before departing, the gentleman promised to dine at Longbourn soon. Darcy and Bingley come to dinner. Bingley places himself next to Jane and pays her much attention, while Darcy finds a seat at the opposite end of the table from Elizabeth, rendering conversation between them impossible. Elizabeth accepts that, having been refused by her once, Darcy will never ask her to marry him again. Bingley visits the Bennets a few days later, and Mrs. Bennet invites him to dinner again. He tells her that he's already engaged, but eagerly accepts the invitation for the following day, and arrives so early in the morning that he arrives before all the women have gotten dressed. After the meal, Mrs. Bennet clumsily manages to leave Bingley alone with Jane, but he does not propose. The following day, however, Bingley goes shooting with Mr. Bennet and then stays for dinner. After the meal, he finds himself alone with Jane again, and this time he tells her that he'll ask Mr. Bennet for permission to marry her. Mr. Bennet happily agrees, and Jane tells Elizabeth that she's the happiest creature in the world. The engagement settled, Bingley comes to visit often. Jane learns that he had no idea that she was in London over the winter, and she realizes that his sisters were attempting to keep him away from her. Meanwhile, the neighborhood agrees that the Bennets are extremely fortunate in their daughter's marriage.
What a time to be alive.
I know, good for Jane at least, and Lydia. But anyway, yes. So we finally have Jane married, or engaged.
Jane and Bingley. Bingley and Jane, finally. As things should be.
I know, I was reading it over again. Like, I always forget, like, how many times Bingley, like, shows up and chickens out. Yeah.
Yeah, because he's so eager. And when he shows up first thing in the morning, they're like, we haven't put clothes on.
I love it. They're like, Kitty's ready. And they're like, who cares about Kitty? Like,
stop worrying about getting Lizzie changed. We don't care about our hair. Go, 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 go. Yeah. That's because Bingley is great.
Bingley is great. Although it keeps, like, it's very funny that, like, Darcy is, like, there to, like, help him along. And, like, he just, like, doesn't take the hint and he keeps, like, getting nervous. But anyway, so we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yes, we are. First off, we have the Wickhams finally coming to visit Longbourn.
Ugh.
On what I'm sure is a painful 10 days for many of them.
Except Mrs. Bennet.
Except Mrs. Bennet, who's the happiest thing on the planet.
Yeah.
And Lydia just continues to be someone who has not learned her lesson at all.
Not in neither of them. I think it literally says Elizabeth's disgusted.
Yes, there's a big gap there between what has been and Lydia really just is her mother, isn't she?
Well, yeah, they literally explicitly say that Lydia is her mother's favorite, like, multiple times in these chapters. Until Jane, of course, gets engaged.
Gets engaged to the richer guy. Meanwhile, we also have Mr. Bennet, who has exact opposite reaction.
Well, he didn't even want Lydia and them to come. He was like, they're never going to set foot here. And then, of course, they do, because he, like, has no power. Well, and Lydia's just like, her obliviousness is, well, oh, Jane, I take your place now. You must go lower because I'm a married woman. Like, what do you think of my husband? Is he not charming? I'm sure all my sisters must envy me. I only hope they have half my good luck. They must all go to Brighton. That is the place to go get husbands.
Yeah, just multiple places in my notes. That's where I'm just like, smack her. Meanwhile, Elizabeth, and I had this as one of my burns, where she's just like, I thank you for my share of the favor, but I do not particularly like your way of getting husbands.
Oh my god, I had that as a burn too.
It is so, because I could just see her trying to be like kind of polite, but not trying that hard.
Yeah, it's so subtle too.
I don't know, like, do we feel like Lydia is willingly in, like, ignoring all of this, or is she really just this clueless?
I think she's completely clueless. She doesn't get it. I honestly think she doesn't get it.
Like, she's programmed a little too hard by the patriarchy about her this being her only thing of value in life. And it's frustrating. One thing that I thought was really interesting is that when they were describing Lydia, it says Lydia was Lydia still, untamed, unabashed, wild, noisy, and fearless. And so many of those words are words that, like, nowadays at least, are words that we would use as a compliment to describe someone, especially fearless. But I don't think that's what... I don't think that's how it's being used right now.
Yeah, it's so funny because I had the same exact thought. It's like, these are exactly the sort of women that I would describe my favorite heroines as. You know, like, in like a lot of the books that I read, or how I would love to be described myself. Like, and it's funny that here it's seen sort of almost like as a derogative.
Yeah, in so many ways, like, you would almost imagine them to be used for Lizzie.
Yes, exactly. I got really excited because I agree.
Your enthusiasm is great.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. So Lydia is, like, super excited to show off, to be like Mrs. Wickham. She wants to go to run into all their neighbors so that they'll have to call her Miss Wickham. Wickham, on the other hand, slightly less enthusiastic.
Yeah, I thought it's really interesting the way that Elizabeth observes him and says, you know, that Wickham's affection for Lydia was just what Elizabeth had expected to find it, not equal to Lydia's for him, which is just really sad.
It is. And at the very beginning, it says Jane Elizabeth felt for Lydia probably more than she felt for herself. And we find that to be true because Lydia is just like, I'm so amazing now. I'm above everyone. But it was really hard to see that, because she is still just a dumb kid who thought that she's getting everything, and annoyingly ignoring all the hardship that everyone went through around them to make this not the worst thing ever and to ruin everyone else's lives.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we get her explaining to Lizzie about how Mrs. Gardner was, like, sermonizing to her before the wedding and she was, like, not listening. And then we find out later that Miss Gardner was telling her, you know, sort of like laying it on thick, like, this is like how you've ruined the family, this is, like, despicable, all this stuff. And she's like, Lydia didn't hear me. And we have Lydia basically telling us, like, she didn't hear her. I don't even think she's in denial. I really don't think she recognizes at all what she's done.
Well, I mean, at 15, it's all just play and fantasy anyways, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard because, you see, Marianne was very similar. She was very romantic ideed. Very romance focused, and her fantasies and passions and all that stuff. But she was, like, someone that we sympathize for a lot more than Lydia, where you just kind of look at her and you're like, you know why everyone was being unpleasant and horrid the whole time? It's because you were extremely dumb and terrible.
Yeah, that's a really good comparison, because Marianne is sort of the fanciful, like, person forgetting everything but the man that she's in love with, who ends up being sort of a scumbag and whose name starts with the letter W. But Marianne learns and apologizes, whereas Lydia, I mean, we only have a few chapters left and a lot of other things to think about, but I just really don't see her ever, at least in this book, learning from her mistake. I mean, maybe she'll learn the hard way when that infatuation sort of fades and she's stuck with this guy in the north with, like, no one around her. I don't know. Maybe Lydia's the type that it doesn't really matter because she'll just be in her bubble forever, but...
Maybe. Yeah, do you think she'll end up just another Mrs. Bennet?
Oh, yeah. I think that's a really good observation. Maybe even worse, because at least there was, like, some sort of affection between them, Mr. and Mrs. Bennet.
That's a good point. Like, at least it seemed like that the two of them ran off because they were, like, really impassioned young people. And this one, they're just like, one of them is a young, impassioned person. The other one's just kind of...
Had no other options.
Had no other option. I was going to say he was just a dick.
Yeah, that too.
But also, no other options and didn't handle them very well.
So we find out that, because Lydia can't keep a secret, that Mr. Darcy was at her wedding, which is very surprising because we haven't heard from him since Elizabeth told him about what was happening with her sister.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the whole sworn enemies thing. I thought it was really funny the way Lydia was like, oh, I promise not to say anything, so please don't ask me because I'm going to tell you. And Jane's like, no, don't say anything. And Elizabeth's like, I'm going to leave because I'm going to ask.
Oh my god, I loved the line. On such encouragement to ask, Elizabeth was forced to put it out of her power by running away. She couldn't even have the self-control not to ask. She had to, like, physically run away from the situation.
I could just see her, like, a little furtive run across a field somewhere being like, nope, can't do it. But then immediately she turns around and she writes her aunt, who may or may not have made that same exact promise.
I love, she goes, my dear aunt, if you do not tell me in an honorable manner, I shall certainly be reduced to tricks and stratagems to find out. Just, like, threatening her aunt. Like, if you don't tell me, I'm going to, like, figure it out myself.
And it won't be very honorable.
Yeah.
You know what? She's honest. And I appreciate that about her.
Oh, yeah. So, I love Jane. And really, like, she seems perfect and lovely. But here's the first time I think I was actually sort of annoyed with her. Because it was like, Jane's like, don't tell us. Like, it's a secret and you promised. And it's like, no. Like, let her tell. She wants to tell. Everyone wants to know. Like, Jane, stop being a stick in the mud and, like, let her tell the story.
Yeah. No one needs you to be a true and pure creature all the time. Meanwhile, Elizabeth, the most relatable person in the world right now.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, yeah, don't say anything. But inside, she's like, but tell me.
Okay, she's so relatable in all these chapters. Like, her inner monologue about Darcy that we'll get to later is the absolute best.
So much Darcy stuff. Like, Miss Gardner wrote back, like, as soon as the letter could possibly be back in Elizabeth's hands, which I fully appreciate. I think this is Miss Gardner once again being truly the best.
Oh, I love this letter. I've forgotten how good this letter was. It's so good.
It's easily my favorite letter we've come across in either book so far.
Mm-hmm.
But she starts off by saying, like, of all the people I expected to ask me about this, I didn't think it would be you.
Oh, I know. Because she thinks that Darcy would have, like, told her, or...
That's what I wanted to ask you. I was like, do you think Mrs. Gardner would have asked someone else? Or does Mrs. Gardner think that someone else would have asked her first? Or that Elizabeth wouldn't be interested or find out?
Yeah, I don't really... I think she's, like, talking in a lot of tongue-in-cheek, I guess, this whole letter. Oh, it's very good. We should dive into it.
Yes, please. We first learn that not only was Darcy at the wedding, he actually was the one who left Derbyshire, like, the day after the Gardners and Lizzie did, went off to find out where they was. He went off to talk to a former governess of Georgiana because he knew that she was intimately acquainted with Wickham, wherever that meant. So as soon as he got to town, that was the first person that he went to. And he had to really work to get the confession out of her where he was. And he was trying to explain, like, why he did it.
Yeah, he tells them, or he tells the Gardeners, that he felt like he owed it to himself because he knew of that Wickham was, like, worthless. and that he wanted his character to speak for himself. He thought it was his duty to step forward and remedy the evil that he sort of brought about. And then Mrs. Gardner writes, if he had another motive, I'm sure it would never disgrace him. And I think she's basically saying, he's doing it because he loves you, but whatever.
Half his letter is like, but you know, I don't know if that's the real reason.
Yeah, it's so
I guess I believe him.
But, I can also see, when Elizabeth gets the letter initially and we find out from Jane and we find out that Lydia had run away, she's the one that tells Darcy, I who knew who he was, I could have told about his character and prevented this. So she is sort of shaming him. So I could see why both of those motives are, legitimate.
Mm-hmm. We also find out that Lydia was in no rush to get married. She was, super certain they would get married anyways. But in talking to Wickham, he said he easily learned that getting married had never been his design. It seemed that Wickham was going to have to leave the regiment anyways because of all his debt, and he was going to live a horrible, poor, boring, lonely life. And he just kind of panicked and saw someone who wanted him and just went, yeah, okay. But he still didn't marry Lydia right away, even though Mr. Bennet probably could have helped him out, because Wickham still cherished the hope of more effectually making his fortune by marriage in some other country. Seriously?
Ugh, scumbag.
I hate him so much. Scott,
scumbag. And this, I think last episode, we were both really confused why Wickham would have done this.
Mm-hmm.
And here we're sort of getting the answer that he was just desperate. He had a plan to marry wealthy, and his backup was to just take Mr. Bennet for all he was worth.
It's sort of awful, because we were thinking he has to have some real reason for all of this to shake out the way it is, and he does, and it's not a good reason at all. It's poorly thought out. It's not a good plan at all. He's just using her to make a part of him feel better and doing absolutely nothing to fix the rest of his issues.
Yeah, and he was gonna be about to be kicked out of the regiment. That's awful. To be kicked out of. So he really had no, he ran away basically and took Lydia down with him because he's like, well,
may as well not be lonely.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe Mr. Bennet has some money that I can have.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
But Darcy manages to get in a deal with him anyways, where he pays off his debt, which is not a small amount of money, and then he would get whatever Lydia was owed as her inheritance, and then more money on top of it, and purchased Wickham's commission. I meant to look up to see what that would mean or how much that is. It sounds like a lot.
Yeah, and he asked for tons of money. Wickham, of course, wanted more than he could get, but at length was reduced to be reasonable. I mean, it sort of makes me angry because Wickham's really getting everything he wants. I mean, maybe not everything he wanted. He wanted to marry someone super, super, super rich.
Mm-hmm.
But he's getting everything taken care of himself because he took the right girl.
Yeah, he just had good luck, good timing. Mm-hmm. I hate him.
It's really skeezy and awful. And I have no love for Lydia, but for her to end up with this guy, I think is not, she's young and it's really kind of a tragedy.
Neither of them are people who you think are going to learn their lesson from this.
Oh no, definitely not. I mean, Wickham got everything he wanted from taking the easy way out and running away. So why would he ever change?
Talk about mediocre men failing upwards.
Oh, gosh. But Darcy is shelling out all this money.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that he waited for Mr. Bennet to have left in order to approach Mr. Gardner about it. The letter said, he did not judge your father to be a person with whom he could so properly consult as your uncle. Which, fair.
That's very fair. For all the crap that Darcy has talked about the Bennet family, he does have a fairly decent hold about who they are as people.
Yeah, I can, it's sort of a diss to Mr. Bennet, but at the same time, I understand. I'm why? And he's close with Mr. Gardner. They have a bond.
They do understand each other.
Yeah. I love this line in the letter. I mean, I'm just going to keep saying this till the end. But Miss Gardner says, I fancy, Lizzie, that obstinacy is not the real defect in his character after all. He has been accused of many faults at different times, but this is the true one. Nothing was to be done that he did not do himself. And, she outlines how him and Mr. Gardner battled for a long time because, Mr. Gardner didn't want to take all the credit, basically, because, like, Darcy saved the day, not only with his money, but with his time and his patience. And Mr. Gardner is an honorable man and didn't want to take all the credit. But at the end of the day, he was forced to yield, and instead of being allowed to be of use to his niece, was forced to put up with only having the credit for it, which went against his grain. But your uncle never would have yielded if he had not given credit for another interest in the affair. So basically, the only reason he allowed it to happen is because the Gardeners know that Darcy's in love with Elizabeth, and, you know, what will men do for love? Like, who are we to stop them?
What? I knew that was the part you're about to quote.
Yeah.
Because it's so good. It is one, it does wonderfully display the kind of people that the Gardeners are, to be like, we don't want credit for something that we're not doing, which is a lot of integrity. But at the same time, like, but we're gonna take this on the chin, because there's this man who definitely is not just doing it because he's some amazing, great person who feels really guilty, but because he may love our niece.
Yeah, it's really lovely. And she's, like, so excited that she gets to explain it to Lizzie so they can have the guilt of taking all the credit off her shoulders.
I'm so glad that she has the Gardeners in her life.
Oh, they're so great. I think Darcy's pretty happy about it, too.
He really likes them.
And then she talks about how she, like, told Lydia, this is wicked and whatever. You brought a lot of unhappiness in the family, but she didn't listen. And then she tells Lizzie, will you be angry with me, my dear Lizzie, if I take the opportunity of saying what I've never been bold enough to say before, how much I like him. His understanding and opinions all please me. He wants for nothing but a little more liveliness, and that if he may marry prudently, his wife may teach him. I thought him very sly. He naturally mentioned your name, but slyness seems to be the fashion. Oh, Miss Gardner's the best.
She is. This is the moment where I'm like, with Charlotte gone and married off, they needed someone in the story to play this role, to be all like, look, I've got some objective outsider perspective here, and I want what's really good for you. The hot rich guy wants ya.
Yeah, and really funny when I reflect back, because I've read this book like 1,000 times, but I never remember how explicitly Mrs. Gardner's basically like, he loves you. Look at all he's doing for you. Mm-hmm. But it's never registered in my mind. Like, when I think back on the book and the adaptations and my memory of it, the story in general, I think about Lydia leaving and me knowing Darcy does all these things, but Lizzie not knowing if Darcy still loved her. But here we have the Gardeners, like, laying it all out for her.
Yeah.
And she still, like, kind of doesn't get it.
I especially love this teasing part from Mrs. Gardner, where she's like, pray forgive me if I've been very presuming, or at least do not punish me so far as to exclude me from P, which I assume is Pemberley. I shall never be quite happy till I've been all around the park. A low phaeton with a nice little pair of ponies would be the very thing. I was like, Mrs. Gardner, you're just assuming they're married now and that Lizzie is just going to, like, let you take a ride around, aren't you?
I love that line. It's so funny. It's not even tongue-in-cheek anymore. It's just, like, explicit. I can't wait to come visit you when you're married and I can, like, hang out on the Pemberley grounds. Oh, it's so good.
Versus, like, Mrs. Bennet's like, oh, when they're married, everything will be great and wonderful and we'll have money and the other girls will be able to get married. No, it's just Mrs. Gardner being like, feel free to let me take a walk in your park once it's your park.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't feel annoying. Like, when Mrs. Bennet does it, it feels a lot just like cute.
Yeah, it's sweet. It's less gross, I guess.
Yeah. But it's very funny that after Elizabeth reads this, she just, like, still doesn't really get it.
I think it's the whole is she the proud one or the prejudiced one now?
Well, I think that she's focused on that he spent all the money for Lydia and less on the why, because she's still sort of in denial about it. Because now, like, you know, when she sort of spirals, right?
Mm-hmm.
She says in her monologue, at least, you know, he had done all of this for a girl whom he could neither regard nor esteem, her hot brother-in-law of Wickham. Like, every kind of pride must revolt from this connection. I think maybe in her mind she thinks, well, he might love her or like her, but he just feels so bad that he did this anyway. And even though it says her heart did whisper that he had done it for her, but it was a hope she shortly checked by other considerations, and she soon felt that even her vanity was insufficient when required to depend on his affection for her, for a woman who had already refused him. So I think she's just sort of in denial. Like, how could he ever want to be with me? You know, like, I'm not vain enough to believe that he could have done this for me, even though he did it for you. Like, just stop.
It's so funny because she was so incensed when he was actually telling her, like, I want to marry you despite the fact you come from a really humble situation and your family situation not super appealing.
Yeah, it's funny that he already just said, like, I don't even care about your family, like, being worse. Like, I just love you so much. Like, he already said that.
He said it. He just didn't say it in a very nice way. He said he could have said in a way, he's just like, no, I'm aware of all the flaws, but I love you in spite of them or because of them, and they don't matter. But he said it however he said it. But now she's coming to terms like, oh, he was kind of right, and I've probably chased him off. And she's just being a little too insecure right now. And I'm like, that's not who you are, Elizabeth Bennet. Come on.
I know. She says that, you know, what she thinks to herself, oh, how heartily did she grieve every ungracious sensation she'd ever encouraged, every saucy speech she'd ever directed at him, which is kind of unfair because I feel like part of the reason he loves her is because she gives saucy speeches to him. But then she thinks for herself, she was humbled and she was proud of him, proud that in a cause of compassion and honor he had been able to get the better of himself. That's just like a very grown-up thought, because even in this like spiral of sensation and feeling that she's having, where she's like, he'll never want to be with me, blah blah blah, she also sort of thinks like, I'm really proud of him. Like, he pushed aside his pride and he was able to do something like really lovely and nice, and even though he'll never want to be with me the way I want to be with him, like, I'm proud of him. And it's like a really grown-up mature thought.
I love seeing it that way. Thank you. No, aww. It does show like that is a real genuine love where it's not all about, you know, we're just doing things for our own personal sake because I want things to be okay for me, but because I just want to see you be the best that you could possibly be. And I think that's something we also saw in Sense and Sensibility, where Colonel Brandon, you know, he did so much for Marianne out of love, and never at no point did you ever feel like, oh, he's doing it because he's trying to convince her to love him instead of this other gross guy that, you know, he even like protected her from the full truth about the gross guy because he thought that Willoughby made Marianne happy.
No, that's like a common theme, I think, through Austen. That's a really lovely one, because it's not that there's anything wrong with sort of romantic love, but this is almost a deeper sort of, you know, I don't just love you, I like you.
It's not just being with each other doesn't just make me feel better.
It makes me better.
It's a giving love. And I think that's something that gets overlooked a lot in
romance,
these books,
and
in romance, because like when you mention Jane Austen to just like some person off the street, what are they going to tell you? You know, open blousy shirts on the moor, rich man comes to rescue the smart girl who likes to read books,
which are great and valid things that we love, but we also can appreciate, especially doing it on this closer level that we're doing it now, something that's valued in the books is this deeper sense, I guess.
Yeah, especially with how much they disliked each other and how, like, apparently unpleasant they were to each other. You have to give them some reason to change their mind from all that.
And they compliment each other. And, you know, we already read the quote out loud, but Mrs. Gardner says, he's a, you know, a fantastic, like, a great man. He could use a little bit more liveliness, but a wife would do that for him. And he's, you know, she's saying, like, Elizabeth, like, you'll do that for him. And
the right wife.
And he humbled her, and it's, as the book is kind of coming to a close, we're seeing on another level how well suited for one another that they are. So it's
not just sexy, sizzling banter, which is also great.
Yeah.
But it's like that and more.
And as lovely as this letter is, we do get a very fantastic interaction, sort of a final interaction. I think this really just puts the period at the end of the sentence here between Elizabeth and Wickham.
Yeah, well, frickin' Wickham, who calls Lizzie, like, my dear sister, like, 12 times.
Oh, God. It's so...
He's still trying to, like, charm her, being like, hey, so, one, I know that, like, you and Darcy probably have affections for each other because I've got eyes and ears everywhere. And I'm sure that's, like, do you think Wickham knows that Darcy is doing all this in part for Elizabeth?
He has to, right? Like, why else would, or he knows, that's a really good question that I hadn't thought of. don't know. I feel like he has to a little bit.
Because I've just been, I've been thinking lately about, like, how much did Wickham know about any of the interaction between Elizabeth and Darcy in the past? Obviously, from the very beginning, he knew that Elizabeth was acquainted with Darcy and planted that story early on. So I'm just like, because he's so good at reading people and being able to charm them until, you know, a certain point where they recognize what he's doing.
Yeah, that's a really good
point. So I'm just like, how much of that is playing into this interaction?
Well, he says, like, early on that Darcy and Mr. Berg are sort of, like, affianced or whatever, betrothed. And Elizabeth hints about that here. Already having met Mr. Berg and knowing that Darcy was, like, completely uninterested in her, you know, she says, you know, perhaps he's arranging for his marriage with this woman, which is, like, another thing that he sort of lied about. And then he likes to fish for information. Like, even if he knows that it might be bad, like, he wants to know how much Elizabeth knows. So he says, you know, like, oh, how is Georgiana? And Elizabeth's like, great, she's absolutely lovely. And he's like, well, I've heard she's improved. You know, when I last saw her, she wasn't very promising. And it's like, well, maybe because you tried to run off with her.
She may not have been great because you were breaking her heart and ruining her good name at the time.
Yeah. And Elizabeth says, well, she's gotten over the most trying age, which is the same exact age that Lydia is now.
Oh, God. Oh, that's a good point. For me, it was wondering if he did know about Darcy's affections towards Elizabeth and that maybe they were stronger than anyone thought that they were before. It wouldn't hurt to be in her good graces and also to not sound like he was trashing Georgiana, even though he was, to be all like, oh, I'm just gonna cover up my tracks and be like, it's fine now. I was still right and I wasn't lying because things are just different from back then.
Mm-hmm.
I just think he's like trying to find some foothold anyways to still make his circumstances as good as they can be by playing the women around him.
Mm-hmm. And I really like this, the whole interaction they have about, you know, he's like, oh, when you were at Pemberley, did you manage to see that parsonage house? It would have suited me in every respect. How I would have liked making sermons. Like, I did. And then Elizabeth's like, well, I heard that you didn't want to make sermons. I heard that sermon making wasn't so palatable to you as present. And he, like, doesn't know what to say.
It's so good because Elizabeth is being so, I think, like, polite and being like, the past is the past and, you know, we don't have to dwell on it. But at the same time, don't try to play me.
Yeah, she makes it, like, clear. And then she's just like, I don't want to fight anymore. Like, this is tiring. Like, you suck. I know you suck.
Yeah, you are my brother now, I guess. This is just how it is.
Yeah.
It's a good moment.
Yeah, don't let us quarrel about the past.
Oh, she's so good. Speaking of, you know, being very grown up and very adult.
Yeah, that's true.
I love this line. Mr. Wickham was so perfectly satisfied with this conversation that he never distressed himself again. It was just a really nice way of being like, he never tried to mess with Elizabeth ever again for the rest of the trip because he knew he had no room.
She was pleased to find that she had said enough to keep him quiet.
And finally, they leave.
I was just about to say, finally, we're rid of Wickham and Lydia.
10 days is more than enough. But before they go, Mrs. Bennet tells Lydia to write her and keep her updated. And Lydia responds with, as often as I can. But you know, married women have never much time for writing. My sisters may write to me. They will have nothing else to do. Oh, my God.
And Mr. Wickham's adieus were much more affectionate than his wife's. He looked handsome and said many pretty things.
That is Wickham in one line right there.
Mm-hmm.
That's all he is. He smiles, he looks handsome, and he says many pretty things. And that's it. And then he, yeah, I guess, just spends everyone's money.
I have an embarrassing confession to make.
Okay.
So safe place. This line here, he's as fine as fellow, said Mr. Bennet as soon as they were out of the house, as ever I saw. He simpers and smirks and makes love to us all. I'm prodigiously proud of him. I defy even Sir William Lucas himself to produce a more valuable son-in-law. So it's a great line, and it's sarcastic, obviously. But when I first read it, I was like, oh, wow, Wickham, like, charmed Mr. Bennet.
Hold on. I think I may have read that line wrong.
I mean, I like absolutely read it wrong. I think it's like being sarcastic, but like the first time I read that line, I thought he was being like earnest. I mean, sarcasm's hard to write.
Oh, wow. I totally read that as Mrs. Bennet because I don't pay attention apparently.
No, it's a weird line. And I've misread it like so many times, but I'm pretty sure he's being sarcastic.
Oh, he definitely. Being
sarcastic. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know, because it reads so, like honest. Like, sarcasm is so hard to write. My first few readings of this, I definitely thought, like, oh, Mr. Wickham is charmed Mr. Bennet. Like, he loves him as a son-in-law.
I completely missed that there was no S in Mr.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I read it as Mrs. Bennet, and it seemed completely natural for something that she would say at the end without irony, just completely sincerely. But no, as Mr. Bennet, it completely changes it, of course.
Yes, see? Okay, so yeah, now I feel validated. It's not quite as embarrassing that.
Yeah, it's 100% a thing that Mrs. Bennet would say. Mm-hmm. But for Mr. Bennet, it's, yeah, that needs like an irony sign afterwards.
I know. Like, normally my sarcasm radar is very good, especially when Mr. Bennet makes comments. But for some reason, that line just like never, like it took a long time for me to really register the sarcasm in that line.
Yeah, I think as it's something that you would expect to hear from another character, mm-hmm. I think it's just, it kind of fits into the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's well rid of Wickham. I definitely don't think that he means it at all.
No, no, of course.
The use of the word like simpers.
He smirks. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He simpers and smirks and makes love to us all.
Yeah, the simpers and smirks, I think, mm-hmm. are words that connote not good things.
But anyway, so we're rid of Wickham and Lydia, and almost immediately we find out that Bingley is coming back to Netherfield. So the momentum of this story is really catching up. Like, I feel like in the book early, you know, they'll be, you know, Netherfield, and then they'll leave Netherfield, and then the Bennets like sit around for a while, and then some, and then, you know, Jane will go to London. It was a little bit slower, but now the momentum is really catching up. Like, immediately once Wickham and Lydia are gone, boom, we get Netherfield Park is open again, and Bingley's in town.
But the whole time that they're getting the news, one, you have Mrs. Bennet, who just keeps acting like, no, I don't really care about it. I don't care. He's nothing to us, you know, and I'm sure I never want to see him again. But however, he's welcome to come to Netherfield if he likes it. And who knows what may happen, but that is nothing to us. You know, sister, we agreed long ago never to mention a word about it. And so is it quite certain he's coming? And you can just see the look on her face being like, no, 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 I don't care. But like, is it really happening?
I know. I feel really bad for Jane too, because she's just like, no, not that I care. He, you know, he's nothing to us. You know, I don't want to see him again. This news does not affect me either way. I'm glad of one thing, that he comes alone, because we shall see less of him. Not that I'm afraid of myself, but I dread other people's remarks. And it's just like really sad. I feel bad for Jane here. I mean, even knowing what's coming, it's still like a lot.
She's such a private person. Mm-hmm. She really doesn't like her dirty laundry being aired out. And there may even be a part of her that genuinely doesn't care and is like trying to move on. But Elizabeth suspects that that's not completely the case, and she wavered as to the greater probability of his coming there with his friend's permission or being bold enough to come without mm-hmm. it. So, like, is Darcy involved? Of course, Darcy's like the constant invading thought in her head. But I also love the idea if Bingley were to come and be like, I don't care what Darcy says, I love her.
Yeah, but we all know, I love Bingley, but he's never going to do that. Yeah.
No, it would have been like a big gesture moment, but it's not who he is. He's just gonna do things the right, correct, sweet, and genuine way that Jane would do.
That's true. I feel really another and poor, like Mrs. Bennet's just like constantly talking about him, and we even have Jane for once sort of expressing an emotion, I guess. Yeah, she's like, you know, I could have seen him with perfect indifference, but I can hardly bear to be him perpetually being talked of. My mother means well, but she does not know. No one can know how much I suffer what she says, how happy I be will when his stay at Netherfield will be over. And I think it's like really the first time that Jane's just basically like, please stop, mm-hmm. painful for me, and no one can understand how I'm suffering because of it. And it's just like a really painful and honest line from Jane. That's something I sort of noted, because it's really the most honest mm-hmm. that she is.
Yes. She's not someone who's very good at appearing vulnerable. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's just part of who she is as a person, especially with her very invasive boundaries invading mother, or because she's like the responsible, strong, oldest one or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that she is divulging to Elizabeth, I think, says a lot about how deeply she feels all this.
But we have Mr. Bingley arrives, and who does he bring but his friend, Mr. Darcy?
Mm-hmm. That man that no one likes, that even for all his money, Mrs. Bennet isn't nice to.
Ugh, well, any friend of Bingley is welcome here, but I hate the very sight of him.
And the whole time, she's incredibly cold to him and distant and doesn't say nice things about him behind his back. And the whole time, Elizabeth hurts so much because she's just like, but Mom, you don't know what he's done for us and how much we owe him as a family.
Oh, it's so cringy. That, like, dinner that she has to, like, Elizabeth, like, sits and has to watch Darcy sit next to Mrs. Bennet and have her just go on and be so mean and uncivil to him. And Elizabeth's just sitting there, like, ugh.
Ugh, Elizabeth.
And she never shared it with Jane. She didn't tell Jane that he did all this.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she isn't even sharing with Jane, who's sharing with her feelings. To Jane, he could only be a man whose proposals she had refused and whose marriage she had undervalued, but to her own more extensive information, he was a person to whom the whole family were indebted for the first of benefits, and one she regarded with an interest, if not quite so tender, at least as reasonable and as fast as what Jane felt for Bingley. She loves him.
I love the phrase whose merit she had undervalued. I mean, I know it's not the most romantic of phrases, but it just feels like his merit was, you know, he's this very rich and handsome man, but that's not enough for Lizzie. She undervalued his other merit, but then she recognized it later. So it's just, I don't know, it just sort of made me feel that she, beyond, you know, how much money he had and everything like that, and she saw the diamond in the rough, so to speak.
And I think it also conveys a certain humility that she's admitting that she was actually wrong, which is not something Elizabeth is super great at, but for love.
For love. She's so relatable here. Like, oh my God, like she, like we've all been there, like in the room with our crush, like, let's see how he behaves. You know, it'll be, you know, that's how, like, I'll, then it'll be early enough for expectation. And she's just like sitting there being like, well, oh, I'm going to wait for him to approach me. If he never approaches me, then I'm done for good.
Yeah, the whole time he's very silent. He doesn't say very much, especially when he's sitting with Mrs. Bennet at dinner across from, far away from Elizabeth. And all his attention seems to be on Bingley and Jane. Mm-hmm. And we know how, like, focused he can be sometimes. But the whole time she's just like, why isn't he talking to me? Like, he should at least be able to be friendly with me, even though he doesn't love me anymore. Why isn't he talking to me? Maybe I'll go over and say hi to him. But it's okay. He comes over and talks to her a little bit about Georgiana when he wants some coffee.
Yeah, yeah.
And she even says, teasing man, I will think no more of him. But also that's a lie because she is definitely going to keep thinking about him.
Oh, I know. But she was like, she was disappointed and angry with herself for being so. And it's just so relatable. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Why did he only come if he was going to be silent, grave, and indifferent? Like, why did he come at all?
I love it so much. And then when he comes over to get coffee, they have not much, they don't have a lot to say. There's just like a couple lines about how Georgiana's doing. And she's just like, well, I guess he's not saying anything. He could be the one to add to this conversation and keep it going if he wants to. And I guess he's not gonna. But then he just like stays there for a few minutes.
Yeah, it's, I can't, is it? It is like annoying that he doesn't say anything because, you know, I think as the reader, we're also sitting at the edge of our seat like, Darcy, we know that you did all this for Lydia, for Elizabeth. Like, say something. Oh, my God. Like, say something. So it is frustrating.
I think we talked about before. In the beginning, we had so much more insight on what was going on in his mind and his feelings for Elizabeth. And now we're completely shut out. We don't even know that when he's standing there next to Elizabeth, if he's, like, acting nervous or trying to think of something to say himself but has no idea. Is it because he's not saying anything because he's pretty sure if he opens his mouth, it's just going to be like, I love you. I really love you.
Oh, no. Yeah.
That's how I was imagining it, at least.
No, I like that reading of it because it's very frustrating as the reader, and along with Elizabeth, to be just like, okay, like, just say it. You know, like, why don't you want to sit with Elizabeth? And I think they're both really self-conscious, and Elizabeth's self-consciousness is more explicit. You know, she's so embarrassed about what happened with Lydia, and she thinks that it's only Darcy's pride that compelled him to do anything. And, like, why would he, like, now, like, he already hated her family. Why would he want to be a part of it now that Wickham would be, of all people, would be his brother-in-law? So even though she has, you know, like, the angel and devil or whatever on her shoulder, she has Mrs. Gardiner saying, he loves you. Here's, like, a calm, methodical, you know, analysis of all the reasons that he loves you. And she's just like, no, there's no way. that he could possibly love me. And then you have him sort of validating that evil inner monologue because he doesn't say anything. And even though we might know, like, he's being shy, he's still sort of nervous and unsure. She's already rejected him, you know?
Yeah. We saw what happened the last time he proclaimed his love. He is not good at it.
Yeah. So it's sort of an interesting dynamic.
I love that afterwards, you know, they were all split up into different tables for their card games. And the way they were described, it sounded like they were trapped there at each game and couldn't even be near each other for the rest of the night. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, it's very funny how many times, I've said this before, but they just like keep coming and leaving and coming and leaving. Everybody, like, why are you there?
I don't know.
Like, what's the point?
They were the buffers, the social buffers, to make sure it was okay for Bingley to be there and not appear like they're fawning too much over him, but also to invite him. It was like, we don't care that much about you, but we're going to throw you a bone because we're having so many people over.
And is Bingley sort of just getting up his nerve here?
I guess. I don't know. Or maybe like proving himself after disappearing. Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I mean, you have to think about that one. There's this great line where Mrs. Bennet is talking about the Mrs. Long when they're talking about Mr. Bingley. I think this is about Mr. Bingley. She says, I do think Mrs. Long is as good a creature as ever lived, and her nieces are very pretty behaved girls, but not at all handsome. I like them prodigiously. In other words, they are really nice and not competition for my daughter for Mr. Bingley, so I like them.
Yeah, yeah. here's where I'm sort of a little bit more, I'm sort of like Mrs. Bennet a little bit more. You know, her scheming here is sort of annoying, but it's more funny. It's not, like, harmful. Like, she's not putting Jane out in the rain to get sick. I love the scene where they're on the couch and it says, Mrs. Bennet was looking and winking at Elizabeth and Catherine for a considerable time without making any impression on them. What is the matter, Mama? Why do you keep winking at me for? What am I to do? Kitty.
This is the calm in rom-com, this whole part here with like Mr. Bingley being so excitable about showing up for to visit them the next morning. He comes so early in the morning where they're like, hair still in curlers. And Mrs. Bennet, back to her early book schemes. It's a lot more fun. Like you said, this is the more likable Mrs. Bennet where she's conniving and not in a boundary crossing kind of way.
Yeah, Mrs. Bennet's schemes for the day were ineffectual. Bingley was everything that was charming except the professed lover of her daughter.
I love that.
But so we already know Mrs. Bennet likes Bingley, but then he also charms Mr. Bennet, which seems kind of funny.
Mr. Bennet doesn't even like all his children.
Yeah, I know. And they like go out, what, like hunting or fishing together?
Mm-hmm. Shooting, maybe?
Shooting, one of them. They all kind of blend together. There's a funny quote that I wrote down in chapter, I think, 55, where they're both like surprised how much they get along. And, the latter, meaning Mr. Bingley, was more agreeable than his companion expected. There was nothing of presumption or folly in Bingley that could provoke his ridicule or disgust him into silence. So they, like, go out on this, like, man-to-man trip, and Mr. Bingley's, like, Mr. Bennet's looking for reasons to sort of be a jerk or be quiet to Mr. Bingley, and he's like, oh, this guy isn't that bad. Like, there's nothing I can really make fun of. He's just, like, really pure, so.
Yeah, not only was he, like, not able to make fun of him, it says Mr. Bennet was more communicative and less eccentric than the others had ever seen him. So not only was he not a jerk to him, he was like a slightly better version of himself. And I'm like, is it because Bingley is like the son he never had?
Oh, that's like a very lovely thought I never thought of.
Yeah, like this, honestly, I do think that if he had a son, probably Bingley is the ideal he would want.
Oh,
if not closer
nice.
To Elizabeth.
Yeah. Oh, that's really nice.
It is nice until you think you've got five daughters, though. You could have been this way too.
I mean, we discussed pretty early on, I think, in our discussion of the book that a lot of, and we'll talk about this more, I think, when we get into the adaptions, but a lot of adaptions have Bingley as sort of this like lovable idiot.
Yeah.
And we've seen him be a little bit more calculating in the actual text than a lot of his representations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the strongest version in my mind is like the Joe Wright version, and you have Simon Wood's like big open face and just like kind of smile that's so big it's someone who is in no way self-aware or insecure about it. Mm-hmm. I will say when we, as you said, get to the adaptations, I think my favorite one is still the one from the Lizzie Bennet Diaries. Mm-hmm. I think he's probably closer to the version we'll see in the book. A little smarter, a little more aware. But I still love the sweet, guileless Bingleys we see.
I'm thinking of the miniseries version when he's just like sitting on the couch with a pillow on his lap, like watching his sisters and Darcy like volley back and forth, and is just like, like, well, I like her. Oh, but also my favorite, one of my favorite adaptions is the Bollywood version. Mm-hmm. And the Mr. Bingley type is played by the actor who plays Saeed in Lost. And he's like very handsome and suave.
So. I mean, Naveen Andrews is going to be everyone's favorite version of everything.
Yeah, he's very handsome and he's like the Bingley character. So
I didn't realize that. I love that.
I know. We're going to get over those.
I can't wait.
It's something to look forward to. Okay. But anyways, we get the proposal. We finally get the proposal between Bingley and Jane. And it's like super understated. And
which is perfect for them.
Yeah, that's true.
In one of the many times that Mrs. Bennet finally gets him alone, it doesn't seem like anything is really happening. It just seems like they're just like having like Elizabeth comes to them and finds them like as if they're engaged in earnest conversation. And then Bingley says something quietly to her and then like runs off. In that moment, Jane could have no reserves from Elizabeth, where confidence would give pleasure, and instantly embracing her, acknowledged with the liveliest emotion that she was the happiest creature in the world.
Oh my gosh. And then she thinks like, why is not everybody this happy? Like, I don't deserve it. It's just so like pure. Like, who thinks that? Like, they're so happy and they're like, why can't everyone be this happy?
And the fact that she's happy for herself, but she's also happy that she's going to be making her family happy with this. And that is super Jane. And she's also not someone who ever talks in superlatives. So to say she's the happiest creature in the world is like the hugest thing for her.
Mm-hmm. She means it. Yeah.
So she deserves it. And I think everyone else agrees that she deserves it too.
We have like the reactions to... we have Elizabeth thinking, and this is the end of all of his friends' anxious circumspection, of his sister's falsehood and contrivance, the happiest, wisest, most reasonable end. Kitty simpered and smiled and hoped her turn was coming soon.
Oh, Kitty.
And then we have Mr. Bennet saying, you know, I have no doubt you're doing very well together. Your tempers are by no means unlike. You are each of you so complying that nothing will ever be resolved on, so easy that every servant will cheat you, and so generous that you will always exceed your income.
I know he's trying to be funny, but this is the whole thing again with like telling Lizzie it's her turn to be ruined by a man, and Wickham would do the job admirably. I'm like, okay, it's less funny now.
And Mrs. Bennet like doesn't get it at all. She's like, exceed their income. He has 4,000 or 5,000 a year, like very likely more. Not the point. I'm sure you could not be so beautiful for nothing, is what her mother says to her.
Yeah, I mean, sure, it helps, but it's just also because Jane is the sweetest. And this is also where Jane becomes the most favored child. So much for being below Lydia here. I mean, we heard all about how nice Wickham's face is, but now Mrs. Bennet's like, oh, he is the handsomest young man that ever was seen. It reads that Wickham, Lydia were all forgotten. Jane was beyond competition, her favorite child. At that moment, she cared for no other.
Oh, it's just so lovely. And then we have just like, again, like the sisters like finally get a chance to have a heart to heart. And Jane's just like, he's made me so happy. He told me he didn't even know I was in town last spring. And Jane still is like the purest of them all when she's talking about his horrible sisters. She's like, when they see it, as I trust they will, that their brother is happy with me, they will learn to be contented and we shall be on good terms again. We can never be what we once were to each other. So finally Jane is like wise to the sisters' machinations.
Yeah, which is nice. I don't know why, but why for some, there's just something about being so happy and so loved that she is very honest now, talking about the sisters and talking about how happy she is. There's something about her where she doesn't care about trying to appear demure and reserved, and it's so nice. And Elizabeth even says, you know, that's the most unforgiving speech that I have ever heard you utter. Good girl.
Yeah, finally.
Finally. And it just seems like a really nice time to be at Longbourn right now, with Bingley coming every day and staying to supper, unless when some barbarous neighbor who could not be enough detested had given him an invitation to dinner, which he thought himself obliged to accept, because he is also the sweetest person and is like, they're nice enough to invite me, so I'm going to have to honor the request, even though I just want to be here with a woman I love and I guess her family too every day. Bingley.
They're just so lovely. I like both of them together. I'm very happy that Jane is happy. And I love this. This is one of my favorite exchanges, definitely in that we read so far. Finally, Lizzie and Jane are spending some time together. And Jane says, "Oh, Lizzie, why am I thus singled out from my family and blessed above them all? If I could but see you as happy, if there were another such a man for you. And then Elizabeth says, "If you were to give me 40 such men, I could never be so happy as you. Till I have your disposition, your goodness, I never can have your happiness. No, no, let me shift for myself. And perhaps if I have very good luck, I may meet with another Mr. Collins in time."
That's very nice humor. And I actually kind of do relate with that. That's the kind of joke sometimes I'll make about, you know, the whole dating thing where I'm like, well, it'll be nice if he showers and has a job, end of list.
Yeah, self-deprecating.
Keep those expectations low, even though you've already received a proposal from a man who makes twice as much as your super rich new brother-in-law.
Yeah, I mean, Lizzie, it's sort of frustrating for Lizzie to still be in denial, because not only do we have Mrs. Gardner's letter and the evidence that Darcy went out and, you know, did all this, like, basically for her, even if she's in denial about it, but then we also have Bingley proposing to Jane finally. And that in itself is sort of a clue as to Darcy's feelings, because Darcy was an impediment in Bingley being with Jane. So, and we know enough about Bingley, you know, as good as he is, like, I highly doubt that he would propose to Jane without Darcy's sort of permission. And we have that almost implicitly by Darcy showing up with Bingley to the Bennet's house. I think we can sort of infer that, you know, Bingley wouldn't have done this if he didn't have the approval of Darcy. Yeah. And so that means that, like, Darcy's fine with his best friend being married into this sort of disgraced family. So wouldn't he also be okay with it? But Elizabeth is sort of just still in denial.
She really is. And I mean, it's probably the same thing that Jane was doing when she's like saying, "Oh, I'm fine with it. I'm indifferent. I'm not bothered by the whole thing with Bingley and being refused by him and all that stuff." But actually, she's like still super duper in love with him. It's protective. You know, you just don't want to make everyone look bad or make yourself look bad, to be like, "I am super interested in this thing and I've been rejected."
Yeah, it's sad, but I feel like even though we aren't seeing into Darcy's mind, I think we as the reader have a little bit more perspective. And so we're sort of a little bit more all-knowing as to his mind than Elizabeth is. Even though I probably, if I was Elizabeth, I would still be like, "Well, why didn't he say anything to me?"
You're like, "Oh, no." Yeah, I totally get it. Just the whole, like, he doesn't like me anymore, but all this is because he's just a really good person and I can see that he's a good person now. So obviously it makes sense that he's just doing this because it's the right thing to do and has nothing to do with me. Mm-hmm. Oh, Elizabeth, come on.
Let's hope she gets it together in the next 6 chapters, because that's all we have left.
That's more than enough time. Come on, just get on it, girl. Okay, so before we finish up, what have we got for those Austin Burns? Some of them I think we actually already covered because they were too good not to mention first.
Yeah, we have from chapter 51, I think we both have the same ones. I thank you for my share, you know, the favor, says Elizabeth, but I do not particularly like your way of getting husbands.
Yes, and regarding the wedding, because Lydia's just like, "Oh, have I told you about the wedding and everything like that?" And Elizabeth says, "I think there cannot be too little said on the subject." I was like, same girl, same.
Burn.
Lydia does kind of deserve it, though, because on top of it's fair to say we still feel really, really bad for her, but she makes it really hard.
She makes it very, very hard. And then I had one in chapter 52 at the very end where Lizzie is talking with Wickham and she says, For she had walked fast to get rid of him, and unwilling for her sister's sake to provoke him, she only said in reply with a good-humored smile, "Come, Mr. Wickham, we are brother and sister, you know. Do not let us quarrel about the past. In future, I hope we will always be of one mind." I don't know. It's not the burniest of burns, I guess, but I love that it says, like, she really tried to, like, walk and get rid of him first. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She tried to get rid of him. She tried to be like, "Look, I don't have time for your shit, so, but we're fine. Bygones."
Mm-hmm.
Also, Mr. Wickham, both of these are from chapter 53, which one of them I did mention earlier, where it said Mr. Wickham was so perfectly satisfied with this conversation that he never distressed himself again. And in my head, my narrator voice said that in a really, like, dry, ironic kind of way, because it's like, well, Wickham knows that his shit isn't gonna fly here.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was when Mrs. Bennet was really sad about saying goodbye to Lydia, her then favorite child. And Elizabeth says, "This is the consequence, you see, madam, of marrying a daughter," said Elizabeth. "It must make you better satisfied that your other four are single."
Oh my God, I love that one.
It was so good, just like laughing, teasing her, because you know that one, Mrs. Bennet isn't really going to get the joke and will be like, "No, everything's still terrible because you're not all married."
Oh, those are some good burns of these chapters.
It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Oh no, next time it's going to be the end.
Oh, God. Are you a little worried? I'm a little worried.
I'm a little worried. I feel like there's a lot to resolve still, don't you?
So much. And I feel like we can get there. And we've seen in Sense and Sensibility that Austen is very good at just coming to a close and making it relatively neat. But it is hard to imagine so much being able to happen in so little time.
That's a really good point. That I think we said the same thing in Sense and Sensibility towards the end too. We're like, there's so much to wrap up, but then she like managed to do it really well. So I have faith.
Me too. And I really can't wait to get to see how everything plays out.
Yeah, so I think we've been doing 5 chapters, but the next group of chapters is like 6, but it's fine. It's all in one go.
Yeah, we'll get it. Mm-hmm. We'll get it. We're not so cruel as to save that one extra chapter for...
Yeah, one separate episode just on that chapter.
Although, we probably could. After that, we'll be doing with the adaptations and starting the next book, which is amazing. We've been reading this book for so long. I can't believe we're here.
I know. This is like sort of the biggie, so it's nice to have gone through it. And I really, you know, for how many times I think I've read this book, I really think that this time I've seen so many more things that I never really recognized before. So feel enriched.
Definitely. It's been so much fun doing yet another book with you by our dear Austen.
And then Annie and I will also discuss we'll introduce which adaptions we will be talking about. So get ready for that.
Mm-hmm. Until next time, when we'll be reading chapters 56 through 61 and reaching the conclusion of this very fine book. Jessie, where can people find us?
You can find us at thedailynightly.com. You can find us on Twitter at NightlyPod and on Instagram at TheDailyNightly. And please feel free to email us your Pride and Prejudice thoughts at our email, which is thedailynightly@gmail.com. Remember, Knightley is spelled with a K. And also, it occurs to me that maybe we should ask people to like rate and review our podcast.
Yeah, that would probably be nice.
Please do. It helps people find us on the various podcatcher apps.
Yes, it's a really, really nice way to support us. Someone was kind enough to DM us on our Instagram to tell us about a book that they are currently reading called The Clergyman's Wife by Molly Greeley. It is basically Charlotte Collins, formerly Lucas, the respectable wife of Hunsford's vicar, and her life as a mother of their adorable daughter, visiting parishioners, and patiently tolerating the lectures of her awkward husband and his condescending patroness, Lady Catherine de Bourgh. Mostly, it's just, she's not done with it yet, but she says it's pretty good so far. It's intriguing. Mostly I'm like, is it funny? Is it sexy? Neither yet, but it still sounds like it's pretty good, in case any of you want to check that out.
Oh, that does sound good. Yeah, you know, some people have recommended to me some other books, and I've read them, and I'll make sure to, we'll give a nice little reading list at the end, too.
Okay, so, until next time, guys.
Yes, happy reading.
Happy reading.